Hello and welcome to Front and Nationwide. This is the Athletics dedicated Blue Jackets podcast. Aaron Portzine with you on a Thursday. This is Thursday. I'm in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, here to meet with some Blue Jackets prospects who played for the Moose Jaw Warriors, Martin Rysavy, and of course Denton Matyshuk. Leaving here in a couple days to go get Stanislav Svozil and some other guy. What's his name? Bedard, Connor Bedard in Regina. I'm joking, of course. We're going to focus on a couple of prospect stories here for the Blue Jackets. The Blue Jackets continuing on their road trip. They won last night in Edmonton. Hell of a game. Kirill Marchenko scores midway through the third period to tie it. Beautiful goal. And Kent Johnson scores the first overtime goal of his career to win it for the Blue Jackets, 3-2 in Edmonton. That's points in three straight, comebacks in three straight. San Jose at home, Calgary in Calgary. They got a point, lost in overtime there, and then they came back and won in overtime last night in Edmonton. Now it's on to Vancouver. They'll play Vancouver. Let's see, if this is Thursday, they play there Friday and then Saturday in Seattle before heading home. So they're playing pretty well right now. I mean, defensively, I think they've steadied a little bit. There were some rough patches in Calgary, certainly. The very tough environment. We can talk about that night if you wish to relive that. I ask you to step to the queue if you'd like to ask a question. Send it along in text form if you prefer that way. I see a bunch in here already. First couple of notes. Attempted to get an update on Gus Nyquist. I asked if there was any update. Was told not yet. So the club is either in Vancouver or on their way to Vancouver. But the diagnosis on Gus Nyquist, who was injured, upper body injury, first period did not return last night. So we'll try to get an update on him maybe before the show ends, but I'm not sure that's going to happen if there's not one at this point. We're probably going to go about 30, 35 minutes here. I've got to shoot over to the rink here in Moose Jaw to get Matyshuk today. Had a great conversation with Rysavy yesterday. I did not realize that he and Stanislav Svozil were such good friends. And really close. They grew up close to each other in Czech Republic. They're drafted the same year by the Blue Jackets. Rysavy was explaining yesterday all of the strangeness. Like, they both end up going from Czech Republic to the middle of Saskatchewan. One is in Moose Jaw here. The other, Svozil, is in Regina. They're extremely close. They dream of playing in the NHL one day. Of course, they're really good friends with David Jiříček as well. They were just part of the World Junior Club from Czechia that finished second, lost to Canada in the final. Rysavy's not considered a top prospect, but one thing I admire about a kid like him is he could potentially spend another year in junior yet. This is the guy that knows who he is. Like, he knows if he makes it to the NHL, it's going to be as a heavy checking line forward. He's 6'3", 209. He's probably going to top out around 215, 220. It's a big kid, but he can move pretty well. There's not a lot of upside offensively. Hasn't shown it yet anyways. Did early in his career. But it looks like a pretty good defensive forward. And all you need to know about how Czechia used him in the World Juniors is he was told by his coach, when you see Connor Bedard go over the boards for Canada, you are on. That's your matchup, which that's a pretty heavy, hefty of responsibility. Anyways, we can talk about any of those prospects if you want. I'm looking forward to spending some time with them, getting to know them a little bit better, writing some stories about them. We can talk about the Blue Jackets and this suddenly resurgent Blue Jackets team. Are you okay with this? I know there's a lot of people who are kind of thinking that the goal of the season should be Bedard or Fantilli. Now, what's the point in winning now? But I know there are some never tankers out there, people who still want to win every game. And I'd like to hear from them. I don't know that you're wrong. I agree with you fully, but I don't think winning should ever be I don't know, not appreciated. That seems like a weird and it doesn't seem like the right thing to do in pro sports to root against winning. But here we are. But I'd like to hear from the other side of it, because it feels like many, many people have come around to the idea of tanking in multiple NHL markets this year. So weigh in on all that, if you would. We'll get to some questions. Let's go first to our stage, if we would, the stage queue, and bring in James B. James, go ahead and welcome to Front of Nationwide.
I was just wanting your thoughts on the ice time for the younger guys. It's been better the past two games, and last night, I hate to say it, but I think we might have gotten better when Gus was out and Marchenko had more time on the wing. And then the other question is Voronkov the answer for the problem child down the middle that we've been looking for?
So to your first point, yeah, I mentioned that today on the site. Like, it's rough to lose Nyquist because he's such a valuable veteran here. But that's where Marchenko's increased minutes came from last night. He was over 16 minutes. Johnson was over 16. That's about 3 minutes higher than each of those guys play. So you could say probably over the course of a game, five shifts extra that those guys got. To me, Marchenko almost gets more impressive with each viewing. And that goal, he's a tall kid. He is not completely filled out yet. And his willingness to take the puck to the rack and score a goal like that, that's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive and a big-time goal. And Johnson, you know, three-on-three is kind of made for guys like Kent Johnson right now. Even at this stage of his career, it's so perfect for him because he's a hard guy to nail down. And now he's got even more ice. So the last night worked out great. I do feel like Brad Larsen is turning a corner a little bit with them. I do think he trusts Johnson a little bit more on the wing and worries less about his defensive exposure on the wing. So that made it easier last night. But when they were down, you know, Marchenko basically moved into Nyquist's spot on the right side of of that line. So there's your boost, and he scores a big goal. As to Voronkov, you know, most people think he's NHL ready. I think probably he's seen as a third line guy, but until he gets here and does it, you got to be. I'm of a mind that you should not bank on that. But if it happens, you're prepared to move somebody out and let it happen. Either move them to wing or you know, move them out, trade them. He is expected to be here next year, and he is a very combative player. I think there's a little worry about his skating speed. So does that make him a fourth line center instead of a third line center? We'll see. But I'm excited for him to get here and see what that looks like. The center ice position, we keep talking about this. That and the defense are obviously the biggest two. Major, am I right to say that, or is goaltending a major issue too? So
Terry's going to fix the goaltending.
Problem. Yeah, they've got to sort goaltending out for sure. But center ice and top 4D are just major question marks. Voronkov can help. He's not top two lines on center ice, but he does. He could provide stability down the middle, which could move Roslovic to the wing, right? Could move. Somebody else to the wing, could move Jenner to the wing ultimately. I'm excited to see what that looks like.
I just see him as almost being a Dubinsky like and just being a problem child when he gets onto the ice. From what I've watched in the K, he just likes hitting people.
Yeah. And I don't know if, I want to see him. I want to see what he looks like here. Voronkov has the battering ram type persona about him. Boy, Dubinsky was a special cat, though. That's a lofty comparison, but I don't think it's crazy either.
So that was all I had. Hopefully,
all right, James.
Can keep losing games and maybe get Bedard. I'm on that train completely.
All right. Good to know. Well, thanks, James, for the call. I appreciate it.
Have a good one, Porty.
Let's go to Alan B.
Hey there. How's you going?
Good, man. How are you?
How are you?
I'm good, man. My question is, do you think that Kromachenkov will lead the Blue Jackets in scoring goals specifically over the next 2 years?
Well, a really interesting thing is he going to lead him in goals this year?
Yeah, he's right there, what, three or two behind Line A, ain't it?
After 25 games.
Yeah.
I mean, he's kind of a meteorite.
He's kind of a meteorite right now.
Yeah, I do believe he's going to break the record for rookie goals in a season. That's a personal bet me and my buddy have, and I think he's going to get it by a long shot.
Yeah, well, wouldn't it be something? He's got 11 goals right now for 25 games.
Unbelievable, and, right?
And the only people ahead of him are Jenner with 14.
And Boone's, and yeah. 90% of Boone's are off deflections, if I'm correct.
I would believe that, or at least close range. But I like what Larson said last night about Lachenko, that so many of his goals are scored in so many different ways. Like, he scored from distance last night, and that goal was the man's goal right there.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Well, Alan thinks it's something to look for. I mean, this is a guy we've been anticipating for I don't know how many years. How refreshing would it be to have a prospect over deliver based on what people are expecting? And historically, it's been the other way.
Yeah, it would definitely be one for the books under Yarmol's tenure, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah. Killer Marchand. Keep it going. Alan, thanks for the call.
No problem, buddy. Have a good one.
See you, man.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And let's go to Philip G. Philip's the last guy on stage for now. We got a bunch of text messages.
Can you hear me?
I got you.
All right. My question is, we've obviously had serious questions about the goaltending throughout the entire season. And when you see performances like what Korpisalo put up in two nationally televised games, with Calgary and Edmonton, you know, I think it's worth asking the question, are those the kind of things that could end up being a situation where Yarmo gets a sort of deal he can't refuse? Because, I mean, that he's got a really low cap hit this year, and I feel like there's got to be a point where he's showing this night in and night out on some really big stages. Do you think there's a chance he gets an offer he can't refuse? You know, and then we're looking at a Merzlikin-Tarasov duo for the rest of the season?
So it's a good question. It's a question that has prompted me to think that this needs to be a story that gets flushed out on the site here in a couple of days. So I want to ask around about this, but my sense is that Korpi's done exactly what you'd want him to do, and that is make this really, really murky. He's been their best goalie. They want to and they need to develop Tarasov the right way, and the injuries have made that a challenge this year. He was supposed to be in Cleveland playing probably 80% of the games down there, and because of the injuries, it just hasn't happened. And he's come up here and he's been a backup both for Merzlikins and for Korpisalo, and he's sat for long stretches. This is not ideal at all, and so I don't think you want to then take that young goalie and put him in a backup situation in the NHL where he's playing seldom again. I think at some point he's got to stretch out and play lots of minutes. So the temptation for me is almost as an insurance policy. If you get blown away by an offer for Korpisalo, then you make the move. You have to make the move. But I would be really reluctant to trade my best goaltender away while he's still my best goaltender. And if you, I guess what this comes down to is, does the franchise have long-term concerns about Merzlikins, or do they think he can straighten it out? If you have long-term concerns about Merzlikins, I think you keep Korpisalo and figure out what to do with Merzlikins one way or the other. But these are all things, yeah, these are the inner workings of the inner thinkings of the organization. Where they're at right now in this lost season, if someone comes to them and offers them a, you know, really good, I don't think they get a first. Maybe if, you know, someone offers them a second, I think you probably have to take that. But, you know, where is this all playing out? It's also almost comical to me that Korpisalo has been in trade rumors for like 4 years in a row. And it's not, you know, no one's making this stuff up. It was all legit, and then he got hurt last year, so it, obviously no one's trading for him then. But he's a UFA again, and he's playing really well. And not only is he playing really well, he's playing really well on a really poor defensive team. So you better think that NHL GMs are looking at this and taking it into account. I think he maybe has played his way back into being a marketable goalie. So it's kind of a tough decision here. And he's playing over Elvis right now. Has for quite a while.
All right. Well,
Elvis is first year of a 5-year deal, so it's kind of messy.
Can I ask a follow-up then? Do you think that in any sort of hypothetical Korpisalo trade that the Blue Jackets might be asking if they can get a backup goalie back? Like, I'm thinking maybe a situation where maybe a contending team isn't really satisfied with their backup goalie who may not be on a long term themselves or may not be getting paid a lot of money, where the Blue Jackets say, yeah, we'll give you Korpisalo as an upgrade. We want a pick, but we also want your backup goalie, maybe with a bit of salary retained to keep the cap levels matching or something of that nature. But we want your backup goaltender coming back here so that we have somebody who can play for Tarasov to sit in the AHL.
Yeah, I think that's very reasonable. In fact, that's probably how it would go. Because again, Tarasov's development has to be paramount. Unless you decide to just throw Tarasov into the NHL full-time the rest of the way, but I'm not sure they're ready to do that. And let's be frank, too. If you're looking to get Connor Bedard, that's not exactly a play that you make either. You may want someone else's backup to play some games to just kind of ride it out. But there's a lot of moving parts at that position.
Thank you.
Yeah. All good points, Philip. Thanks a lot. Reminder, if you want to step to the stage and ask some questions, we'll go for about 20 more minutes. Andrew R. says, wait, I'll go to Andrew R. first because I just saw his name first. Any word on Chinakov? To my knowledge, now I'm not back in Columbus watching. He may be skating now. To my knowledge, he was not skating when this road trip began. So that's probably 3 days old that he wasn't skating. That could have changed by now. Let me take a drink here. Hang on. Philip W. says, any idea how Alexander Texier is doing on ice and off, and if there are any indications that he will be back next year? Nothing's changed to my knowledge there. The expectation is that he will return to the NHL next season, but I think a lot of people are in wait-and-see mode. As you know, Jarmo Kekalainen went over earlier this season, met with Tex and his agent, had lunch. They say the purpose of that trip was not to even ask him about what he planned to do NHL-wise. Was he coming back? It was just purely to visit, see how the kid's doing. I saw someone, this is from No Name Attached, I saw someone predicting a line with Jordan Dumais next year. I said, that's crazy. No way is he NHL ready. Thoughts on his trajectory? My sense is that I don't think anybody anticipates Dumais being in the NHL next year. Maybe, you know, maybe a call-up or maybe later in the year. I think he still has another year of junior eligibility, though. As much as he's destroying the queue right now. At last check, he's got more points than that Connor Bedard kid. Pretty amazing. Yeah, my sense is that he's going to need some development, but you know, the kid is absolutely explosive offensively. People worry obviously about his size. They say his foot speed is not great. Those are three major challenges for someone hoping to play in the National Hockey League. Can he overcome both of those? Some players have, not many have. But this kid is offensively special if you talk to scouts. Marcus M. says, do you expect players, picks, or a combination for Gavrikov? Good question. I think it depends on the organization. Typically, teams, unless you like a prospect of theirs that they have somehow or in some way dulled their optimism about, you have a different opinion, then you can pry the player out. More often, it's a pick because there's not a name attached to it yet. My sense is the ask is for a first and a third, which is similar to what they got for Savard. But if it's, you know, it depends on the prospect or the team. If there's a prospect that you like and the team feels like he is worth the value of a third round pick or less, then perhaps that could be a match instead of a pick. Christopher A says, what's the over and under on a number of goals Marchenko scores before he gets his first assist? Where's he at now? 11? Here's a question too. What's going to happen first? Marchenko assist? Liam Foudy goal. Liam Foudy has yet to score a regular season goal in the NHL. Kirill Marchenko has 11 goals and 0 assists. He could win the Cy Young with numbers like that. I'll say, I don't know. I mean, I think the odds are that he's going to get an assist here pretty soon, right? I mean, half the assists you get, you can like mess up and get an assist, eh? It's kind of funny. I wonder what I got to look and see what's the most goals scored without an assist. What's the most NHL goals scored before a player has registered an assist? Sounds like a good question for the league. Alan B. says, is Kirill the future goal leader of the team within 2 years? It's certainly plausible. Again, he may be the goal leader this year. He's three back of Laine and Jenner. Three. Something worth watching. Is there any chance the CBJ will trade Korpisalo for anything of value? Do they want to keep him around and let Tarasov develop in the A? So we just kind of touched on this. It's something that I need to poke around about and flush out in an article, because I do think it's a great topic right now, because Korpisalo has done exactly what he should do, which is make a big mess out of all this. I mean, Elvis has done it too, by not playing well. So there's a lot of question marks there. But Korpisalo has really, really proven himself a good goalie again. He's back to where he was before the hip surgery, which is really good to see. Trent A says, not the year anyone was hoping for. As an outsider, morale seems reasonably good given what they have endured. Being a little closer to the action, any sense on overall morale of the team? Well, I think we can say right now it's pretty good, because I think the game they played in Calgary can be really, really unifying. There's a lot of new guys on this team. There's a lot of guys that don't know each other on this team. Gaudreau really hasn't been here that long. But the way they played in that game, I thought was really, really had the power to unify. It was really cool to see. Line A getting into it with Zadorov, Gudbranson sticking up for him and basically challenging the entire Flames bench. Just the way they kept coming back in that game. If I'm the Blue Jackets or a Blue Jackets fan, that's really good to see, because it would be easy. And I think we've seen in some games these guys get demoralized and the foot comes off the gas pedal, especially in some third periods. So where it's at right now, it's going to get harder. March is going to be a bear. They've got three home games the entire month of March. They also have a big All-Star break here coming up. I think they've got three more games before they're off for like 10 days, and who knows what they look like on the other side of that. And the games are going to get tougher. Teams are jockeying for position now, and you just aren't. So the games are going to get tougher. It's still not going to be an easy end of the season, I wouldn't think. But I think they're in a good place right now. Nick B says, any suggestions on food or things to do in Vancouver on the way there now? Well, I mean, Vancouver is the most beautiful city on the stop, my opinion. Many agree. I love Granville Island. Big market, little island just off of Vancouver. Just hop in an Uber and go there, or a taxi. It's a very popular place. There's all kinds of restaurants there. There's a big, beautiful market. There's all kinds of shopping. There's bars, huge bridges over your head. Beautiful. I like watching the biplanes land in the harbor. You can see the snow-capped mountains from downtown. Everywhere you look is a postcard in Vancouver. Just beautiful. And it's great to visit. No one can afford to live there, but it's great to visit. Daryl C says, has Corpy played his way back into being trade bait? If so, do you get more than a fourth for him? Right now, I'm not sure what the market looks like for him. He is a UFA. It must be taken into account. And again, I question if he's played his way into trade bait or if he's played his way into staying, because, God, you'd hate to see the organization trade their best goalie. Here's an anonymous question. I've seen Roslovic also tossed around as trade bait. It seems like that would be more likely next year, but who might you say are bubble trade chips? Well, I think Roslovic is a consideration. Teams are always looking for offense, for goal scoring. He is a creative offensive player when he's playing well. I think teams that would have an interest in him probably see him on the wing, because he's really been maddeningly inconsistent at center ice. I think he's the kind of player that a lot of people think they can fix still. They see a lot of things there that would be interesting to work with. So if they get the right offer, I think that's possible, especially with Voronkov coming, with probably them drafting a center this year. I think that center ice position is going to change dramatically here in the next several months. So I think it's possible. Nyquist, we'll see what his injury is like. That could play a big part in the trade deadline. Again, Gavrikov could be moved. Korpisalo. I keep hearing Andrew Peak interest too. And I think people see a cheap, long-term signed defenseman who brings a physical edge. Teams who see them as a 5'6", maybe a 6'7", but still affordable. So yeah, his name keeps popping up too. Philip G says, is Yarmo doing any scouting runs? Well, last night, while the Blue Jackets played in Edmonton, Yarmo Kekalainen was in Vancouver for the Canadian Hockey League prospects game, along with a billion other scouts, checking that out. So yes, and he's going to continue to do extensive scouting in the second half. Joshua K says, given the string of injuries that seem to repeat year after year, is anyone looking at possible shortcomings in how we conduct conditioning and possibly flexibility training for our players? So it's a good question. And if these were groin injuries or muscle tears through the act of skating and just normal play of hockey, then I think that would be a consideration. You look at the way these guys have gotten hurt. Werenski whiffs on a check. It plows into the boards awkwardly. There goes the shoulder, right? Voracek catches an elbow in the head in Finland. I can't remember. It's been so long ago now how Danforth got injured. But this is not the rash of groin injuries they had years ago where you were alarmed. What are they doing wrong here? Because guys are tearing their groins at outrageous rates here, or they're not getting better. I think a lot of these have been, like Boone Jenner broke a hand, hit by a puck. Like there's no amount of training or flexibility training you can do that's going to make your fingers be able to get struck by pucks without some damage. So problems there. Let's go to back to the stage. We're going to bring Philip G back in. Philip, go ahead. You are up front and nationwide. Wait, now we got Alex and Philip.
Alex, yeah, Alex is here too. Let me
Alex, you go first, and Philip, you can hang out and listen for a minute, and we'll get to you next.
Hey, can you hear me, guys?
Gotcha.
Excellent. Thanks for having me on. My first question would be, I'm looking at some of these sites like the Armchair GM and places like that, and a lot of them seem to be alluding to maybe the Jackets buying out Goodbranson. Do you think that's a possibility to save some cap space, or is that probably not in the plans for a year or two? And then my second question would be, should Voracek not play next year? With his $8 million salary, how does that work? Like, are the Jackets, they're obviously on the hook for that, but does that give them any sort of cap relief, or how does that work?
Yeah, so first to Goodbranson, I can't imagine that 1 year after they sign him to that contract, they then take steps to buy him out. That would extrapolate the buyout over 6 years. I still think that defense needs an Eric Goodbranson. I think one thing that has to be taken into account right now is if you watch them play defensively, Gavrikov is playing up a pair. So any evaluation of Gavrikov is probably a little unfair because he's playing higher in the lineup than he normally would or should. Similarly, Goodbranson was signed. I mean, this is how he got his career back on track in Calgary. He was a 5'6 defenseman. They played him in very specific ways. And Columbus intended to do the same thing, and then everybody gets hurt. And so now Goodbranson is playing the minutes of a top four defenseman. Some nights he's playing the minutes of a top two defenseman. That's not ideal for him. And there, you know, of course, there are some nights where you go, ooh, that's a rough play by Goodbranson, but you're measuring him. This would be like putting Corrali. It's not unlike putting Boone Jenner at the number one center and then critiquing him as a number one center. That's not an ideal fit for him. I think Goodbranson becomes more reasonable if you play him in the slot that you defined for him, and they've not been able to do that. I don't mind the money as much as the term, but I can't see them making a decision 1 year later to spend 6 years getting that off the books. If there is a decision to buy him out, it would be years down the road. You know, a couple years or so when it's just a 2 year extrapolation rather than six. What was your second question, Alex?
Yeah, thanks for answering that question. My second question would be, you know, obviously we don't know the future for Voracek, but should he not be able to play next? Should he not be able to play next year? That $8 million.
Yeah.
How does that work? Do they get any sort of relief with that, or are they pretty much on the hook for $8 million?
So my understanding is that money will count at the start of the season when roster's set. And the moment the roster set, he can be put on long-term injury, and that $8 million becomes space under the salary cap that they can use. So it's kind of a mixed bag where they can go up and over once they get things set and then put him on LTIR. And there are teams around the league that have multiple players like that. Phoenix or Arizona's been sort of this the storage facility for players that nobody wants, or dead money, if you will. So they'll have to get creative at the start of the season to make it fit. But I don't know if you remember, a couple years ago, they sent Wenberg down to Cleveland when rosters set. That was not a demotion based on skill. That was, he didn't need waivers and they could get his salary off the books and get under the cap, set the roster, put somebody who was injured on LTIR, and now they've got room to bring Wenberg back up. So it would be a move like that. Let's go to Philip G. We got time for a couple more, and then I got to bolt. Philip, go ahead.
Hey, I was curious if you could speak on the organization's philosophical way they're going about this draft. And what I mean by that is, obviously, everybody knows you've got the big three at the top, but after those big three that look like they can be franchise centermen, you do have like a bit of a next tier which there is a chance the Blue Jackets could fall down to, with Matvei Mishkov, Will Smith, Zach Benson, and a whole bunch of other guys there, multiple of whom are wingers, including Matvei Mishkov, who a lot of people think is one of the more talented players in this draft. Philosophically, as an organization, do you think that the focus this draft is going to be drafting the best player they can possibly get? Or do you think there really is a search for not only immediate value, someone who can come in and play quickly, you know, not Mishkov, but also getting a center instead of a wing?
So I don't know that this is specific to this year, but I think most teams follow the same path philosophically, that if all things are equal, you take the center. So my sense, and this will all be sorted out and we won't know about it because these are draft secrets that they take to the floor with them, but it would be Bedard, Fantilli, Carlson as the top three. And then it gets interesting for them. Do you go with the next tier center, Will Smith, the guy you mentioned, or do you go Mishkov and wait? I do think at that level of the draft, you consider organizational need a little bit. But again, if you think Mishkov is head and shoulders above another player, then the position should not really matter. I don't get the sense from people that anybody other than Bedard and Fantilli are surefire NHL players next year. I think those two are seen as good-to-go NHL players. I'm not sure about Carlson. Maybe he's a year away. Don't know that. That would be up to Carlson, obviously. But my sense is that Fantilli and Bedard are both NHL ready. The others have question marks in terms of are they ready immediately. So if you're picking one or two, I think the draft is already done for you. I think it gets really interesting. A little interesting at three, although it's probably Carlson, and then really interesting at four. So I think that's kind of how it breaks down for the Blue Jackets. They'd love to be able to add a number one center this year. And, you know, the more you look at it, the more you realize that that's really the best way to add top centers. It's really how you get them. It doesn't really matter what team it is. Those guys just don't move around very often. So that would be the hope there. I think their philosophy is centers over wings if all things are all things are equal, and right shot D over left shot D if all things are equal. Thanks for the question, Philip. Let's go to Paul B, and we'll wrap it with Paul B. Go ahead. What's your question? You're on live, the live room with Front of Nationwide, Paul.
Hey, Hope, how's it going? Hope Canada's treating you well right now.
Always does. Always does.
Good. Hey, I read your article a couple weeks ago, and you interviewed John Davidson. And
yeah,
one thing that came across was a lot of frustration. Obviously, it's not been the year they wanted. And one thing that he was talking about the injuries and everything. And it's, I don't know if he said it's stunted or just changed the development of these young rookies. And yeah, it sounds like they had a real plan on how they wanted to use, you know, guys like Kirill, Johnson, so on and others. And that just got blown apart by the injuries. And is that just basically his frustration stemming from these guys being thrusted into positions they may or may not be ready for and kind of been put into sink or swim situations?
You know, I think his disappointment was maybe more about, say, a player like Tarasov, who was supposed to play a lot of games this year and could still. It could be a busy second half for him, but the first half has not gone well. You know, they took their time with Marchenko to get him up here. They've left Juracek down there. I think, you know, the injuries, one thing he alluded to without saying it directly is, you know, the idea that Cole Sillinger should go to Cleveland to sort things out has been kicked around. But one of the reasons that it was difficult to do that is because they didn't have centers in Cleveland that they thought were capable of even temporarily filling a job in Columbus. And that's because Gaunce and Justin Richards, the two centers down in Cleveland, were injured. And they may still be out. So, you know, the thing with injuries that I think gets missed sometimes is it really, like, Jake Bean is a young defenseman. Boqvist is a young defenseman. I think we know what Werenski is now. So that one, as tough as it is, you're not really in evaluation mode with Werenski. But, you know, I'm not sure what Jake Bean is going to be as an NHL defenseman, but I know I would have liked to have seen him play a lot of games this year. You could be learning a lot this year. You could get, you know, still 60, 70 more games of NHL evaluation, and that's gone. You know, Blankenberg was out for a long time. That's evaluation time. Boqvist is still super young. And he's been back now for a little while, but, you know, it's just these years go by, and even in a lost season, you can get some form of progress out of it by making decisions on guys based on what you see over 15, 20, 25, 40 games rather than just spot duty in and out stuff. I don't know that it's so much about Marchenko or Johnson because those guys have stayed healthy and they've been able to sort of bring them along. Johnson kind of got hurried into the middle, but I think it was more about, you know, the Tarasovs and some of the guys on the defense that they couldn't really treat the way that they wanted to.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. I thought it might have been stemming to the, you know, the rookies, like you said, with Johnson having to go into the middle. Maybe they didn't want to put him there right away or hide him on the wing for the year or something like that. Go ahead.
I kind of like seeing him in the middle I'm not done with it yet, frankly.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is the kind of year where you might as well, if you're ever going to try some stuff, here's your the basement walls. It's sort of like you want to try painting something. Go to the basement first. Try it in the basement walls. This season kind of feels like a basement kind of season where, you know, it's not nothing's going well. You might as well get something out of it.
No, absolutely. And, you know, for everything that they, you know, everyone's been critical of the Jackets and how they've kind of been handling things and how the coaches have been handling things, you know, I see a lot of people saying, you know, obviously Kirill's having a lot of success right now, a lot of goals, and the kid's playing well. And it's kind of like, how has he not been up here this entire time? And it's easy to say that now, but it's, you know, how do you know that if he started day one, he would have done this in the first 25 games of the year had he not gone up to Cleveland? Maybe they made a right call there, and this is how the kid's developing now because of it.
Yeah, and maybe he's having the success because of the things he learned down there in Cleveland.
Exactly.
That he had to sort out. And you know what? That's a pretty good coaching staff up there in Cleveland, too.
Very good. Well, I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody, thanks for chiming in. Really appreciate it. We're going to cut it short so I can get over and chat with Matichuk, his coach, and some other people with the Moose Jaw Warriors. I certainly appreciate it. Appreciate your time, as always. And we'll talk again next week. You guys have great weeks. Thanks for sticking with us. Talk to you soon. Take care.